Good morning and welcome back to Nahum. Today we're going to be learning in Nehemiah Perek Vov, the sixth chapter of the book of Nehemiah. At this point in time, Nehemiah is busily reconstructing the walls of Yerushalayim and the doors, and we now hear about the very dishonest and dangerous dealings of his neighbors, who, after having tried to interrupt the building through regular violence, and they were not successful because of Nehemiah's guard duties and the way that he was able to set up the people, dividing their time between construction and protection, now they turn in a more dirty direction. This is remarkable because it's just so contemporary. It's so much, unfortunately, what we see going on today. There's a lot of important lessons to be learned from this perek. You know, one of the important lessons that we should be considering to ourselves is that although it is true that the superpower, which was the Persian Empire, did give Nehemiah the permission to be the governor, in the end of the day, he can't just turn to the superpower to settle his scores necessarily on a day-to-day basis. He has to work it out himself. And so therefore he's left holding the bag, having to deal with these disingenuous, dangerous neighbors. And he has to work it out himself, and the burden of that responsibility and the protection of his brothers and sisters in Yerushalayim and in the cities of Yehuda and Binyamin rests squarely upon his shoulders and not those who sent him necessarily. Let's take a look at the first four psukim. In this we hear about an invitation to a summit. So Sanballat, Tuvia, and Geshem. These are the folks around them who don't want the building of Yerushalayim, they don't want Nehemiah. And they see that the walls have been progressing very successfully. The doors have not yet been put into the city, so they still have hope to be able to stop this. So what they do is like this. They send a letter to a joint letter to Nehemiah from this, and they said, listen, let us hold a summit, let's gather together by Kfirim in a place called Kfirim by Bibikas Ono. So this is a city called Kfirim in Binyamin historically. Let's go together, and Nehemiah realizes that they want to do evil to him. So what he does is the following: is he sends back in messengers and he says, look, you know, I'm really busy, you know, I so apologize. Sounds like a beautiful thing, you know, a summit of all the surrounding nations and we can all work together. But you know what, I can't leave my work midway. So sorry, you know, maybe we'll take a rain check and we'll get back to you later on. And they sent him this invitation four times over, and he responds, he defers it four times as well. So it's interesting, how does he know that it's bad intent? The Rashi says it was intuition, Yevanti mehem. And I understood that they didn't want good. The Gana Naul says a very interesting thing, and he says, look, leopards don't change their spots. He knows that these people are out to get him. So the fact that they now are bringing him to the table about to talk about a peace summit, he knows something is off. And this is also important to realize. What obviously is being planned over here is a planned assassination. And they realize that Nehemiah is the sole leader who's going to pull things together. They want to get rid of him. So they find a way to perhaps lure him out of the protection of Yerushalayim in a way that they're able to assassinate him. And he realizes this, and he, without letting on that he knows this, he just gives the excuse that he is too busy. We should also appreciate the worth of an individual over here. Sometimes we have this feeling and we have the sense that, you know, individuals are replaceable, certainly not anybody, and certainly not leaders like Nehemiah. If they were to get rid of Nehemiah, this would end, everything would grind to a standstill, and he therefore is able to avoid this without showing his cards that he knows what's going on. So the next step of the intrigue goes on. Now in Sukkim Hay to test, in which now Sanballat sends a fifth letter via his messenger, but it's called an Igeres Pesucha Biyodo. It's an open letter. And here's what it says inside the letter. It says, you know, We all know what's really going on. We know that in fact the Jews are preparing to rebel against the Persians. That's why you're building the wall, and that's why you're saying all these things. And in fact, we know that you established prophets in Jerusalem who are calling upon you as the king of Yehuda. And he says, look, you know, we know this. You know, this is, the king is going to hear about all this stuff. So, you know, lechav nivatzo yachtov. Let's work together. Maybe we can, you know, we can avoid the damage which is going to be caused by your aspirations to grandeur. And so again, Nehemiah now responds to them and says, never were such things. You are inventing all of this stuff. You are all terrorizing us. You're all undermining us. Now help us. Is what Nehemiah says. A few basic questions to understand this section. What does it mean an open letter was sent in the hands of this young man? So the Malbim says, the open letter is because he wants to impress that the matter was urgent. You know, he sends this, that this is, you know, there's no time to stand on ceremony. We know that the word is out there about you, Nehemiah. Let's try to help you, Nehemiah. They're trying to again lure him out of Yerushalayim. The Metzora says the reason it's open is not because of pressure and not standing on ceremony. It's because he wanted people to read it along the way. Now remember, in those days, if you wanted to send a private communication, you would sign it and seal it. You would put a wax seal on it with a signet, which would indicate that it had not been opened or read. Here, this is specifically omitted in order that the messengers could read it. And you know how, what they say, the definition of a secret is in English. A secret is something you only tell to one person at a time. So all you need is a messenger to be able to, you know, go to the bar that night. You know what I'm saying? And then the whole world's going to know this. What he was essentially doing, Rav Schwab points this out, is he was using the public as a tool against Nehemiah. Now, everybody's only talking and saying, oh, you know, Nehemiah has aspirations to be a king and there's prophets and the whole thing. And now Nehemiah has to answer not to Sanballat, but to them, but to the populace, which means to say that now Nehemiah is going to be forced into a corner, that he has to now work with these people who are offering to help him. Let's work this out together, Nehemiah. We'll help you. It's interesting. So what is actually Nehemiah saying to them? In the last line, he says, you know, you've always been terrorizing me and now come and help us. So the Ibn Ezra says, no, maybe he's making a bid for cooperation. He says, if you really want to help us, come on, roll up your sleeves, get your spades out and come and dig with me. But the Masura says, no. What he's saying is like this. You know, yesterday you were trying to, you know, sling rocks and you're trying to hurt us. And now you're saying you're coming to help us? I don't think so. So what he's saying is that if you put this all together, it is obvious that you have no good intent for us whatsoever. Now, the next stage of the intrigue continues. It gets more complex. In Pesukim Yud to Yudala now, Nehemiah goes and visits a person by the name of Shmaya ben Deloya ben Mehetavel. Right? So it's this individual called Shmaya. And he's Atzur, he's sequestered. And he says, and this man says, look, what we should do is Nivoed El Beis Elokim. We should go to the Beis HaMikdash, says Shmaya. We should close the doors of the Heichal because I know they're coming to get you tonight. There's an assassination plot against you, Nehemiah. Let's go. And Nehemiah responds and he says, should a person like me flee? I'm the leader. I'm going to go into the temple. Is that all right for me to go into the temple? And he says, I realized that this was not God sent. This man was not. This was a man hired by Tovia and Sanballat. And in order to be able to terrorize me. And he says, I will not desist. I will not be scared. And he turns to God and he says, Zochra Elokai leTovia uleSanballat kamaasov eile. Remember the dirtiness of Sanballat and Tovia in their hiring. Vagam Nodaya Hanavia. There's a woman called Nodaya, the prophet. Uli Yeser Hanavia Mashayum Yorinosi. All the other prophets who are hired to terrorize me. Terrifying. What seems to be going on over here is you remember in the claim just a moment ago when Sanballat said, oh, they're prophets in Yerushalayim who are claiming you're a king. Was he making that up? The answer is no. He had already hired the prophet who was making the false declarations that Nehemiah sought to be a king and was saying it from a religious perspective. Nehemiah now goes and visits this person who he realizes must be the prophet that Sanballat is referring to. He goes and visits him as if he, you know, he doesn't summon him to the king, as if, you know, the king's in charge, but he very, you know, submissively goes to this person, Shmaya, and listens to him. Now, it doesn't say that he actually is a prophet. It just says he's Atzur. He's sequestered himself. He's probably, you know, living a life of religious piety on the outside so that people think he's a prophet as such. But he, in fact, he is a false person. The person in Tanakh referred to as also Atzur or Netzar refers to Doeg HaAdami when... he was in Nov. It describes him as a Ne'etzar, a person also sequestered. We know what became of him, a very evil person. Similar thing over here. Shmaya is an insider who is a very dangerous person as well. It is interesting that the other prophets that is referred to, Nodaya, or it could be another name for Shmaya, or it could be another prophetess as an example, who are there slinging shots at Nehemiah. And this is important to realize. Nehemiah is not a prophet. Nehemiah is a statesman. Nehemiah is a political leader. He does not claim to be a prophet. So it could be extremely damaging to him that the statesman is now being attacked by the religious enterprise. This is a terrifying point over here, and this could really undermine his standing, which is why Sanballat and Tovia are in fact involved in this, which also leads us to the realization that we're at an important meridian in history, and that is a transition between the rule of prophets and the rule of the sages. Prophecy is ebbing away. The last of the prophets are disappearing, but in that last kick, there are people who are emerging as false prophets, almost as a carryover of the past, but here utilized in the wrong and negative way. We now focus on Psukim Tezvav and Tezayin, in which the building of the wall is finished. It's finished on the 25th of Elul, 52 days after it was started, or after the letters of Sanballat and Tobiah, according to Ibn Ezra. And when the enemies hear that this has been achieved, Vayiplu Ma'od Be'einehem, they were downgraded in their eyes because they knew that this is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What that means to say is that despite the spiritual attacks, despite the physical attacks, the fact that in such a short amount of time, under all this pressure, he succeeded was clearly a divine sign, which undermines all the words of these false prophets, which undermines all of their efforts. This is an incredible sign from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The way we see Hashem's hand in history today, in the post-prophetic era, is seeing things like this, as things come together, not seeing the words of false prophets. And finally, we get to the end of the parak where we hear a very disturbing thing from Yud Zayin to Yud Tes, the last three psukim in this parak, where we hear about the fact that there were many Chorei Yehuda, that there were many of these chieftains in Yehuda and Judea who would send their letters to Tovia and describe what's going on, because many of them were Baalei Shvualoi. They had some sort of connection or commitment to him, that in fact he himself was a chassan, he was a son-in-law to Shechaniah ben Arach, so he himself was already in the family of some of the Jews, and that's why they would also remind the people in Yehuda of the many favors he did for them. He was obviously a pecha, he was a powerful person, and therefore they would send the letters to Yutovia, who in turn would send letters to terrorize and to scare Nehemiah, which means to say we have a situation where the governor of Yehuda, when you'd have a closed cabinet meeting, when Nehemiah would come out, suddenly all that information would be leaked and that information would be used against him. So he lived in this terrible place where nothing was secret. He couldn't trust his most close advisors because there was so much intermarriage, so much dual citizenship, so to speak, so much dual loyalties, more carefully put. And what Rashab makes an interesting point over here, and that is, where is Ezra? While this is all going on, where was Ezra HaSofer? Ezra was a contemporary of Nehemiah, and he was a spiritual leader. Surely he should have been able to stand up spiritually for Ezra, for Nehemiah. And so Rashab argues that Ezra receded from the public limelight, although he was given political powers as a spiritual leader. In a certain sense, towards the end of his life, he receded more from this leadership position and gave it and ceded it more to Nehemiah, which means today Nehemiah, to a certain degree, is out by himself. And you have to understand the struggles that he's going through. This parak really, more clearly than any other, paints for us the perspective of the struggles that Nehemiah had, and despite them, he succeeded. You can understand why he would say things, Zachra li'alekale tovah, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu should remember him for the good. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.